in my childhood. I was invited to have a play date. My white friends never had a play date at my home. So I went to Megan's house. The streets were wider. The homes were bigger and brighter. It was obvious that it was the barrier of race that kept us from that because the segregation was race-based.
Even here, Evanston, Illinois, a proudly liberal suburb of Chicago, the barrier and burden of race have long weighed heavy, like a winter storm. Evanston's alderman for the 5th Ward, Robin Rue Simmons, was born and raised in the historically black neighborhood she represents.
This community was redlined historically, and that has come along with damages that continue today. Resources were stripped away from the black community, along with wealth as well.
The city's plan to change that? Reparations. An idea long debated, proposed over 150 years ago. First, 40 acres of land, later a mule, for formerly enslaved people to share the American dream built on their backs for free.
We built this nation!
A promise long broken, until now.
This is a historic vote.
Evanston is set to become the first U.S. city to pay out reparations, a total of $10 million, starting with increments of up to $25,000 per person for housing.
I didn't start my elected career even discussing reparations.
So what
Never.
Changed?
I was looking at data. I was looking at what we had done, and reparations was the only answer.
The only answer?
Any more of the same was going to only, at best, help us sustain the oppressed state and the disparity that we have.
Only? That's a big word.
The only legislative response for us to reconcile the damages in the black community is reparations.
Why housing specifically?
Housing specifically and home ownership is a path to begin to build wealth. You know, when you have stable housing, you have an opportunity just to breathe and think about what's next. It provides a sense of place in a community where we're largely renters now and we should be owning.
We anticipate litigation with the premise that you cannot use tax money that's from the public to benefit a particular group of people. But throughout history, taxes were used to benefit a certain group of people while others were excluded from that.
Dino Robinson is the founder of Shorefront, an archive dedicated to chronicling and celebrating black life in Evanston, a richness long undervalued. His documentation going back to the late 1800s, invaluable in measuring the cost of racism and the need for reparations.
Black community members were moving throughout Evanston and forming, you know, pockets in the city of Evanston. And it caused the white community to start panicking, like, what do we do about this?
The response to that panic? Redlining, a federally sanctioned project, assigning market value to neighborhoods, a grading system, A to D.
The D areas were usually relegated to the black community. The area D was always in red.
This deliberately pushed Evanston's black families into an area that became the 5th Ward, segregating them from white families sought after property and ultimately wealth.
Banks in Evanston would not loan to black families. Real estate agencies would not show you anything other than the 5th Ward.
That map still is the map of our concentrated black community, our disinvestment.
Today, white residents of Evanston have nearly double the income and home value of black residents. This racial wealth gap is prevalent nationally, with black Americans possessing less than 15% of the wealth that white Americans have.
I am 98 years old.
We moved to Evanston in 1959.
This is a lot.
Black residents who lived through redlining and their descendants are eligible for reparations. That includes Ben Gaines Sr. and his son, Ben Jr. Ben Sr. grew up in 1920s Dixon, Kentucky, part of the Old South, the business end of an era's most violent weapon against African Americans, Jim Crow. He landed in Evanston. Here, Jim Crow wore a smile, but still inflicted harm on black home buyers.
The contractor, he said, find a lot anywhere in Evanston, and I'll build whatever you want. Well, when he said that, he meant in the black neighborhoods. And we still have these same types of problems.
Uncle Ben is a realist. He calls it like he sees it.
Younger members of Ben Sr.'s family, his grandnephew Jared and his children, Nick and Maya, know a more progressive era.
Growing up in Evanston for me was definitely good, despite the racism that I faced.
Will you apply for the reparations?
I will, yeah.
And why?
Because it's old.
Quote-unquote wealthy African-Americans are not the equivalent of quote-unquote wealthy white Americans in this country.
A national reparations policy is a moral, democratic, and economic imperative.
House Resolution 40 is the latest national step toward reparations. Supporters have included Ta-Nehisi Coates and actor Danny Glover.
H.R. 40 was an opportunity to have a commission to study reparations, but also the further context in which we look at slavery and the impact it had on us.
It seems to me your journey with reparations is America's journey with reparations. You are the grandson of sharecroppers,
yeah.
People who are a generation away from slavery.
Yeah.
I wonder if you've ever thought about how might Danny Glover's life have been different if your grandparents, the sharecroppers, had been given the reparations promised to them, had they been given 40 acres and a mule? How might your life have been different?
I never thought about that. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I know they did what they could. They made it work with extraordinary belief in the possibility of this country.
So you think Evanston could be an example for the nation?
I think it can. Evanston, Illinois, did something that no other city has done. If we're able to use that as a platform, maybe other cities might adopt the whole idea of this.
And other cities could take up Evanston's sweetly ironic funding solution, a 3% tax on newly legal marijuana sales.
It's the most appropriate use for that sales tax. And in our city, 70% of the marijuana arrests were in the black community, and we're 16% of the community. All studies show that blacks and whites consume cannabis at the same rate.
There's been debate over whether those taxes can sustain the fund long term. And even those who proudly support reparations wonder aloud, is $25,000 too little, too late?
It's a drop in the bucket. You have denied me all my 98 years. Hopefully, before I die, I'll see the world change.
Uncle Ben, he's 98, so we can understand his skepticism. Where does your skepticism come from?
I would say it's less like skepticism and more education. People who are acting like they're ready for change and behind closed doors, other things are happening, right? And we see that all the time in politics.
What does it say that my 25-year-old has to feel like that?
You don't learn about these issues at your high school.
We aren't really taught black history outside of, slaves came from Africa. So part of reparations, it can't just be money. Like, you have to teach us what we need to know.
One could argue it's potentially more symbolic than it is substantive.
I disagree that it's symbolic at all. I understand that $25,000 is life-saving for some families.
But relative to the injury, it's not nearly enough, and I get that.
This notion of reparations in Evanston isn't meant to be a drop in the bucket, but the beginning of a stream that becomes a river, that becomes
Absolutely.
An ocean.
There is a lifetime of work ahead for us to get to justice.
For all of your work in this space, what worries you still?
Not enough resource, not quick enough. I do believe that we're committed as a city, and I can't wait to celebrate the family that receives their first reparation benefit. I cannot wait for that day.
The work continues and is in good hands. Coming up next, how John Legend found glory in a year full of struggle in America.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours.
Oh. Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer.
We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Pandemic and racial reckoning are challenging the soul of this nation. Now to John Legend, transforming the healing power of music into medicine for us all. Here's ABC's Adrian Bankert.
When we talk about reckoning, we can't do the reckoning without doing a real assessment of what American history has been. America promised all these ideals, but Black people were like, hey, but what about us? You told us it was about equality. You told us that all men and women were created equal. You told us we had equal protection under the law, but you didn't fulfill that promise, and we're evidence of that. Black people have been saying that for centuries.
And there have been generations singing about it, songs like We Shall Overcome, for just as long. John Legend is no exception.
One day, when the glory comes.
Using anthems like Glory that he co-wrote for the film Selma to connect art and activism. For him, it's about storytelling. From his hit single Ordinary People,
ordinary people.
To the intimate ballad All of Me,
'cause all of me loves all of you.
He aims to connect with his audience and connect them to each other.
I love art because art helps us envision a new world. It helps us become closer to each other. It helps us see each other's humanity. It's been a tough year for so many people. I think it's been a mental health challenge. It's been a physical health challenge. It's been an economic challenge. And it's been felt even more in the Black community than it has been in many other communities.
With George Floyd's death and so many other things that happened. Was your heart breaking? I mean, what were you thinking?
At first, I was just mad and grieving. I hate this repeated story that is so much a part of Black Americans' experience. I wanted to stop. So we contributed to bail funds, and then I tried to be a part of a conversation in the country where we talked about what we do to do better. We've spent far too much on law enforcement, on jails, and on prisons, and Black people have been bearing the brunt of that.
When you were growing up, were you thinking all the time, like, I'm gonna make the world a better place, I'm gonna change things?
I did.
You did?
I did think this. I even wrote an essay about it when I was 15. I said, I'm going to be a successful musician, I'm gonna use that success and fame and acclaim to make my community better. And it was informed by the artists that I love, like Stevie Wonder and Marvin Gaye and Nina Simone and Aretha Franklin. But it was also informed by the activists that I had been reading about since I was a kid. They were my superheroes, and I wanted to live a life that was impactful like they did.
The message of impact can be found in his film company, Get Lifted, and the stories that he and his producing partner, Mike Jackson, have shared. Their diverse slate of content highlights the creative and creators that are unapologetically Black.
We want to elevate certain creators that may have been overlooked.
I ain't never met no man that meant nobody no good.
Their documentary, Giving Voice, follows students from across the country, like Chicago native Nia Sarfo, as they compete in the August Wilson monologue competition.
I don't trust none of these men.
Theater can really transform, and I mean really. I felt like people were seeing me for the first time.
It was just a remarkable opportunity for them and for us to be able to produce this film, tell their story. It was just a magical opportunity. And I also got to write a song for it, a song called Never Break, a song about human resilience and the power of love to get us through all the challenges that we face in our lives. So I wrote this song in 2019, and then everybody knows what 2020 brought. It brought so many challenges to the world, and then it brought challenges to my own family. We lost a baby. It was the most traumatic experience my wife and I have had to go through together. That was a time when that song, Never Break, really meant the most to me, because we'd never been tested like that. She'd never been tested like that. And we had to be there for each other. Our love had to be there for each other for us to survive that challenge. I think we've come out even stronger than ever.
Do you know how brave you are for
sharing that? Chrissy's the brave one. She's the one that felt like she had to tell this story. She wanted to share this experience with other people, because she knew other women have gone through the same thing, other families have gone through this same thing, and she wanted to let them know that she was there for them and she understood their pain. And the outpouring of love and, oh, I've been through this too, and empathy that we've got from people has been staggering, honestly. I'm always a little more private than she is by nature, but her instinct was right to tell this story, because it helped a lot of other families who have gone through it to know that they're not alone and they're seen. But it also helped us. It's not a community that you want to be a part of, but once you know that that community exists and you are become a part of it through your own experience, your own tragedy, it's helpful to know other people are out there.
What motivates you to be resilient?
I feel so fortunate. I get to do what I love to do every single day. I get to write songs for a living. I have fun when I go to work. It's not easy to write a song, but I truly get joy from it. I also keep going because I feel like I have an opportunity to bring more love and more beauty and more joy into this world. And given that opportunity, given the platform that I have, I don't want to waste it.
And finally tonight, America's sweetheart meets America's weapon against COVID-19.
Vaccine, I'm begging of you, please don't hesitate.
Country legend Dolly Parton.
Vaccine.
Warming up before she receives a dose of her own medicine.
Think you got it?
I got it.
Okay.
A COVID-19 vaccine that the star helped to fund. Dolly donating $1 million to the cause. Leave it to Dolly to inspire and lead the way. That's Nightline for this evening. Catch our full episodes on Hulu. We'll see you right back here at same time tomorrow night. Thanks for the company, America. Good night.